You're listening to a podcast from 702. Moby.
Keeping you up to date with all the latest news and developments on COVID-19, 702. Asanya Mosaka
on 702.
702.
For the curious.
Thank you for staying with us at 7 minutes past two, keeping warm. Hopefully by being with you, you know, there's a little bit of warmth wherever you are that's being generated. Later on, we'll connect with Nicole Lowe. That's where we take your calls. So get those ready. You can maybe drop us a voice note as well. But we like those calls because Nicole often has follow-up questions if you're experiencing difficulties with your car. And today we're also going to start off by looking at checking your car battery at home. You know, just yesterday when we talked about fashion, I noted the fact that there's this trend to repair your own things at home. People are learning how to sew. More people are knitting and so on. And even when it comes to cars, many of us are looking at YouTube tutorials, you know, attempting to do some of this minor work ourselves. And Nicole is a great guide for such. So later on, we'll speak to him just after 2:30. Get ready to give us a call on your car matters. We speak to him once a month, in fact, for technical help. But for now, though, I'm really excited because we are introducing a brand new experience on the show, if I can put it that way. I call it an experience because we're just tightening up on something that we have been doing over time, which is to have a series of conversations on a chosen topic, on a particular subject matter. And we call this our series. It's simple as that. It's going to be a series. Every month we'll have a series. And that's where we get to really dig down, drill into a particular topic that is impacting our lives. And so something that's having a huge impact for many of us, of course, the coronavirus has been very significant, incredibly significant. And it's perhaps one of the most traumatic experiences of our lives, right? It will have a huge impact on us as individuals, on society, and on us as a workforce. It may be hard to imagine right now, but it will end at some point. You know, there will be, things will settle, we'll step into a new way of doing things. We are stepping into this new way of doing things. Some things may go back to the way they were, but others will have to do them in new ways. And so we will be bringing you a series every single month. And for September, we bring you a series on the future of work, right? There are a number of momentous moments in life that change the way we do things. 9/11 was one of them. It changes how we fly, the protocols before we board a plane. And COVID-19 is particularly unique because it is global, it's enduring, it's been pervasively disruptive when you think of all the industries, everybody across the world being affected. And also it's impossible to ignore. And so when it comes to our workspaces, we are going to be incredibly affected in how we work. And so for this month, you can look forward to all of these conversations with Graham. He is a futurist, an unlearner. I particularly like that particular title, that specific title, I should say. I like that a lot. And he's also an author of 6 books, and he's a speaker as well. He's worked with business leaders from across the world and has had many years, not just in speaking and collating, and not just his formal qualifications, but also in deep research. And he'll join us for this month as we unpack various aspects of how the future of work is going to change. Good afternoon, Graham. Lovely to connect with you again.
It's fantastic to be chatting to you, Zania, even if we're doing it inside a freezer.
Yes, indeed, we are. We are. Let's see. Let's see if we can get through it without the chatter of teeth from the cold. So I'm looking forward to having this series. I must say that we've outlined a number of conversations, and we decided to kick off with this one because it's an ever-moving one, right? It's an ever-evolving one when you think of how organizations are grappling with what this moment means to how work gets done and in how they do business. Just how momentous has it been? Just how impactful has it changed? How much has it changed the workplace?
Well, Zania, obviously, everybody who's listening to us and listening at home rather than in an office realizes just how big the impact has been. But I think beyond the obvious, beyond the work from home issue, I think there's a few things bubbling underneath. And we're now at a time where I think we can pat ourselves on the back and say we've survived the crisis moment. Mm. But now we're beginning to realize that there's probably longer to go than we thought in terms of the disruption of COVID. And then I think we're beginning to realize that some of the disruptions that COVID has brought us are going to last long beyond COVID. And probably the one that most people are going to be impacted by is not the work from home revolution. You know, a lot of people are not actually enjoying it, being at home. And I think that's fair enough. They're actually not working from home. They are stuck at home trying to survive a crisis. And that's different from setting yourself up with a home office.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real revolution is the work from anywhere revolution. So 6 months ago, for most people, the default setting was you have to go to the office. And everything you need is at the office. And if you have to, you can take a day away from the office, but it's not ideal.
Mm.
And I think in this time of COVID, we are going to shift completely to a different default setting. Yes, you will still go into the office. Yes, there will still be things where it will be better to be with your colleagues in an office location. But the default setting will be you don't have to.
Mm.
Come into the office if it's good for you, if it helps you to improve. And I think that's the biggest shift taking place at the moment is this default setting shift.
Right.
And we're going to see huge implications of that.
Yeah, let's look into those. But before we do that, I want to get into this idea of anywhere. Yes, at the moment, yes, there is this threat of COVID. But when you say anywhere, what does that encompass? Because a couple of examples already come to mind. Not too long ago, we featured or we had a masterclass with a wealth coach who lives in Sri Lanka. And she runs these retreats in Sri Lanka. But she's lived across 15 countries in the past 8 years or so. And she's still able to earn. She's living debt-free. She's able to conduct her business, carry on with the service that she provides from anywhere in the world.
Yeah. Two weeks ago, Zania, I had two phone calls on the same day. And they were just so contrasting. They will stick in my mind forever. The one was from a yoga teacher.
Mm.
Friend who contacted me and was just telling me how tough things were. She was asking her for advice. Her lease was coming up on her studio. She didn't know how long COVID would last. And she was basically saying she's going to give up her lease. And she was, yeah, she was really sad. Her mm. business has been decimated and she's struggling to see a future.
Yeah.
A few hours later, I get a contact from a person who's a Pilates teacher and wanted to tell me that early on during lockdown, she realized she was going to have no clients face to face. So she began to record videos, put them up on YouTube for free, contacted all of her clients and said, look, there are some things you can follow. Here's my YouTube channel. I hope this is helpful for you. You know, keep fit, keep healthy during lockdown.
Mm.
That video channel has now started to get a bit of a following. She has a particular style about her that people are enjoying. And it's now progressing to go internationally. And people are contacting her now and saying, thank you for all of your videos. I'd love to have a private lesson with you.
Yeah.
And she's sharp enough to work out which country they're in and charge them the appropriate dollar, pound, euro rate.
Mm-hmm.
While she lives in Johannesburg, not paying rent on a studio and managing it in her own time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not always as simple as that. Obviously, those are just two very stark examples, and the reality for most of us is in between. But that just shows two very different attitudes and two very different approaches to realizing that if geography doesn't matter, and this, I think, is one of the big aha moments that a lot of people have had. They might have said 6 months ago that they couldn't do their work from anywhere because mm. they have to be at the office. Now they've had a few months of realizing that's not true. And they're going to be a lot more open to thinking, well, if geography doesn't matter, there's a few implications. A massive implication is that you can actually apply for a job anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And you can look for talent and you can look for people to work in your business who don't have to be within driving distance of the office. Mm. That's going to fundamentally change the way we think about teams, the way we think about work, the way we think about jobs, the types of jobs we think we could access. And I really do think that's going to be a big shakeup. But then there's also going to be a shakeup. I think big companies, instead of having one big head office in the middle of town somewhere, mm-hmm. they might have a smaller office with hot desks and then have hubs over the city. So let's just think Joburg for a moment. You know, you could have a little hub in Four Ways. You could have a little hub in Rosebank. You could mm-hmm. have a little hub down in the south in Soweto. And then people can gather at those hubs for a day or two a week or for a few hours mm-hmm. Each day instead of all of us having to create that rush hour traffic. That's one thing nobody's missing, right? We don't need rush hour traffic again.
The spaces that you speak of, the physical spaces will be more for interaction and more or less like to build community that the team actually is.
Exactly. And I think people need to think about this. You know, when I speak to people now and I say, are you enjoying working from home? Do you want to go back to the office? Lots of people say, oh, I really can't wait to get back to the office. Then I ask them why. Mm-hmm. What is it that you would get at the office that you're not getting at the moment? And they tell me things like, oh, it's just wonderful to be able to walk over to a colleague's desk, chat to them, get an answer to a question, and then, you know, we can resolve an issue easily there. I'm an introvert, Zane, and whenever I think of that, I picture that I'm the person that you are coming to interrupt mm-hmm. at the office.
Yeah.
And I, you know, for every person who loves walking around and chatting to their colleagues, there's two people who hate that. And, you know, I think we've romanticized the office and it isn't what we remember it to be. Mm. So here's what you need to do. When you are planning to go back to the office, when your company says, right, some of you can come back, don't just go back and start doing what you were doing back in January and February. Sit down with your team and talk about genuinely what is it that you want the office to do for you?
Yeah.
How do you make that happen so that you don't just go back to the way that things were? You actually design with intention what you want the office to be. And so it's when we say office of the future, we're not talking some artificial intelligence type future. We're literally saying in 2020, you've been given a golden opportunity to redesign what the office actually looks like and make it brilliant.
Or if there's a project, you come together for a couple of days daily, you know, you go to the office, say, for those 3 days while you're doing your brainstorming, because maybe ideas are generated better that way. Then after that, you break away to go and implement anywhere may be. And I think of the structure of big multinationals, whether it's Facebook, Unilever less so, for instance, but say companies like Google, especially the big tech companies, they have people sitting in different parts of the world, but forming teams anyway. So you may be a manager sitting in, say, you're overlooking EMEA and you're sitting in Dubai, but then you oversee people who are doing work for EMEA, but located in different parts of not just this continent, but parts of Europe, parts of the Middle East. That's intense, but it's working already.
Exactly. And this is, I suppose, an even a bigger point for people to understand, is most of the disruptions that have happened to us this year were probably going to happen to us already.
Yeah.
Now, I worked with a mine just a few weeks ago, and they've been begging their IT department for 2 years to implement smart contracting. Mm. So this is a mine. They've got hundreds of suppliers, and these suppliers are sending faxes and filling in forms, and there's signed documents everywhere. And the administrators have been saying to IT, please, can we just move all of that stuff online? Smart contracting works. And IT for 2 years has been saying, well, we're getting there one day, not yet. the lockdown in March is announced on, what was it, Sunday night? So the president announced you've got till Thursday to sort yourself out. Within 3 days, as I know, this mine had implemented smart contracting and they're loving it. It's worked perfectly for them throughout lockdown. They'll never go back again. 3 days, that's all it took.
Yeah.
It was always going to come. And what COVID did was forced the acceleration of some of these trends. But we can't pretend it's just a COVID issue because these technologies have been developed. And as you say, there are many companies around the world who work this way already. And so now we're just being forced to learn these things.
Mm.
And we mustn't take it as a struggle. I mean, yes, of course, it has been difficult and we were forced into it. But we should also embrace it now as we look to the future and say, which bits are really working well? What technologies, what systems and processes can we improve? And then look to the future. We mustn't just grit our teeth and try and get through to the end of lockdown and go back to normal. That's not going to be your best way of approaching the future.
Hmm. So what do, let's look at the teams, because we're still talking about human beings that need to be productive, right? This virtual way of bringing together teams, how is that going to change and how is that going to affect how we work?
Well, there's some really great research that's been done all around the world on virtual teams for many, many years. Some of it is now publicly available, and you don't have to just, as I say, look again at what's happening with COVID. This mm-hmm. is research that's been done over a decade or two. Probably the guy that's done the most work on this is a professor called Nicholas Bloom, who works out of Stanford. And if you just do a search for Nicholas Bloom, work from home, you'll find a magnificent TED talk that he did a few years ago, which is really well worth everybody's time. And on the basis of the research that people have done over years, I think we can see that there are multiple levels at which virtual teams really work.
Mm.
The lowest level is the level that most people experience, which is you kind of have to be at the office, but you can take a day here or there and just take a few hours away from the office and you stay connected because you've got a cell phone and you've got email and you've got WhatsApp. The second level is probably the worst level.
Yeah.
And that is what he calls synchronous remote. What that basically means is that your boss and your team pretend to be at the office when they're actually at home.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a starting time. Most people get up and they actually get dressed for the office so that they can sit on a Zoom meeting with their office clothes on. Your boss checks in that you've started at the time you're supposed to start, that you don't walk away from your computer. You get given a lunch break. There's even software, Azania, that's been loaded onto people's computers to check that they are, I call it pretending to be at the office when they're at home. And that's actually that's the worst of all worlds. Because you don't really have the office equipment and technology and connections, but you also don't have your home comforts. And unfortunately, that's where some people are stuck. So you've either got to go back to the first level or you've got to progress to the third level, which is where you actually design your team and your engagement for online. And then there's a further level beyond that where you stop caring about the hours that people work and you go completely outputs driven. And you say to people, what do you need to achieve today or what do you need to achieve this week? And then you let people get on and do it. If somebody works best from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock in the morning, don't you as the boss of the team want your team member to give you their best hours? So why don't you let them work when they work best? So it's a whole mindset shift that we have to go through.
Yes.
And the problem is too many people are stuck at the worst possible place, which is pretending to be at the office while stuck at home.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to either go back or go forward, but we certainly don't want to stick where we are.
Right. So let's look at, let's go back a little bit, because there's some interesting issues that it raises about the consequences of this revolution, you know, this work from home or from anywhere revolution. Mm. What does that mean as far as talent is concerned? So what, you have to build your infrastructure to be able to attract the best talent from anywhere? I mean, now we're like not only sourcing from within our borders, or, you know, we're sourcing from everywhere in the world.
Well, exactly. So if you do plan to build a team, to build a system that can be online and virtual, then your mindset begins to shift. You begin to realize it doesn't matter which hours a person works.
So what does that mean for the talent, for the candidates, for people who are looking for employment when you are competing with a global talent pool?
Exactly. It means you don't even have to be in the same time zone, which means that you can genuinely, if you are a talented person, you need to recognize you are now be able to play literally on the global stage.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to make sure that you look as if you are capable of doing that. Make sure your LinkedIn profile is updated and visible. Present yourself as a person who can compete and is competing globally. Look for jobs that are international. So don't just be restricted by your geography.
Yeah.
The same is true if you're an HR manager, of course, or somebody who is trying to get talent into the team. Many jobs and tasks now do not need to be restricted by geography.
Mm.
And this, of course, at one level, if you are talented and you have the data and you've got the technology to be global, this is an exciting possibility. If you are restricted in your mindset or your resources and you can't play in that space, this is something of a threat, of course, because you are now competing with people from all over the world who have maybe better skill set, who possibly are prepared to ask less for the hours they're going to swap for work.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think in South Africa, we are the ones who are likely to threaten others, because given the rand, dollar, rand, pound exchange rate, we are probably well set up to be very affordable resources for the international
territories. Yes. And I just shudder to think what this is going to do to all the property stock that we have for offices if there's all of this downsizing. We saw it with Edcon, for instance. Yes, they were going through some very difficult financial problems, but they were already downsizing the space that they occupy in different malls. So if head offices are saying we don't need, for instance, I think of the Discovery building, for instance, Discovery Health has that massive building in Sandton.
Yeah.
And so when the time comes where they say only 30% of you will be in the office at any given time, you know, there'll be plenty of that rental stock in the marketplace. So that will inadvertently also affect the property market.
It will absolutely do that. That's one of the huge issues coming up. There are going to be lots and lots of buildings around the world that are going to be emptier than the landlords expected. Yeah. And that isn't just for office space. I do presentations for a living, and one of my most fun slides that I show at the moment is I show a big headline from the Guardian newspaper saying the retail sector in the United Kingdom shed 140,000 jobs this year alone.
Mm.
Everybody goes, wow, that's what an impact. And then I flick on a little spotlight on the date of the article, and it's from December last year.
Mm. That
was last year's figure before COVID came.
Mm.
All around the world, because of e-commerce, because of these digital disruptions, the nature of the space we need to do our work, to have our shops, to do things. And we wouldn't have said this 6 months ago, but even today, to eat at restaurants, the nature of the space is changing.
Absolutely.
And that's going to have a huge knock-on impact to the price of property, the cost of construction, and ultimately, even through the property portfolios, to the value of our retirement funds. So, you know, this is going to impact every part of our lives over the next few years, no doubt.
Absolutely. Graham, thank you so much. It is a standing appointment for this month that you and I talking about the future. And I know that next week we'll be talking about, as far as the future of work is concerned, communication technology. Thank you and see you next week.
Thank you.
And that was Graham Codrington as we kicked off our September series. And we look forward to your feedback. This idea of being able to stay with a particular theme once a week and drilling further down into the various aspects of it. And this time around, it's the future of work, but the future is already here.